Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
There's a lot to talk about. Independence Day celebrations, what to grill, how to catch wild pigs for that Italian sausage, but I'm not going to talk about that today. I know a lot of people, all right, in my job, the job I've been doing lately, for four decades now, a lot of people. And there are thousands of people that are said to be my friends on social media and the like, and I'm not trying to disassociate myself with them, perhaps some of the crazy ones, but you know, I really don't have a lot of friends. I've got my wife, Betty, my sons, Peter and Spiro, my brothers, Peter and Nicholas. Nick has been a guest on this podcast, and he's coming up with an article soon on American Conservative. And I've got friends like Steve the Pilot and Jeff Carlin and our next guest, Tom Serafin. Guys that you can talk about stuff too, without worrying whether what you say might offend them. Guys that you can talk about things too, about the meaning of life and what, where are you on this planet and where are you in your journey? And you have to do that because in the work I do, in the work Jeff does, work Tom does, we're always supposed to be on. You have to be on. You have to guard your words. You say things for effect. And sometimes it just gets tiring. Now, in the world of politics, there are no friends. What do they say? If you want a friend in politics, get a dog. Well, I have a dog. Zeus the Wonder Dog. And he's fine. He's sitting downstairs bothering Betty right now. But I want to introduce you to my friend, our friend, Tom Serafin of Serafin and Associates. He's our guest on the Chicago Way podcast, the best podcast, I think, of politics in Chicago. And sit down, pour yourself a drink like Tom has done, and I shall do. And Jeff, I don't know if Jeff's drinking, but maybe he has some he has some yeast that he hasn't turned into a pie crust. And join us, because right now you're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So, Tom Serafin, so Jeff Carlin, what the hell's going on in the world? How do you make sense of it? I can't, with all the craziness lately. I just want to withdraw from it, you know, hide under a... like a bundle of straw.
We all need a vacation.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I know, but Tom, thanks for joining us. And love to pick your brain about the world at hand. We just had a big election in Illinois. And yeah, it's been a busy week on top of that, right, John?
Yeah.
It's been more interesting than the White Sox, that's for sure.
The White Sox are interesting to Tom. They used to be interesting to me. I still like the club. But as long as Tony La Russa's there, I don't know. I'd say bring back Renteria, you know, but he'll never come back. Or put Ozzy in there, maybe.
Well, what surprises me about the White Sox, and I know we're not here to talk about them, but, I saw them in spring training for a few games, and I thought they played with a lack of efficiency. I mean, they weren't aggressive to the point where I thought they should be, and I didn't think they ran the bases well, and they didn't play well in the field. And despite whether or not you can hit the ball in baseball, you can play good defense. You work at it, you practice at it, you understand, you hit your cutoffs. There's certain elements of baseball that you just have to do and have to do right. You don't get picked off at first base. There's certain things, you know how to run the base. And, hitting the ball is one of the most difficult things in the world. Obviously, out of 10 times you go up to the plate, if you miss 7 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer. You hit the ball 3 times. So
even Michael Jordan couldn't do it.
Right. So, but defense is where they're really not playing well. And it's really disappointing because they've got some very talented people, and they got a strong fan base. And my wife lives and dies every night, complains about them and rails about them and is happy with them. There's some dedicated fans out there, but it's a tough year. They're having a very difficult year.
Yeah. It's having a difficult year. Richard Irvin, right? What happens next for him?
Oh, good segue.
That's right.
Yeah.
I do what I can.
Well, I think he goes back to being the mayor of Aurora, and people are happy with him. He's happy there, but he's got a taste of what it's like to be on stage, center stage, downtown Chicago. He probably didn't like it towards the end of it, but on the front end, it was, pretty enticing. The problem was not Richard Irvin. It was the problem was the organization around him and the way the effort was constructed. And what they knew, what they didn't know about him. He's always lived his life the way he is. You can't subtract a man just because he lived his life for 40 years one way. And now that you have a couple, political constructionists want to run a campaign around a design plan that he wasn't necessarily part of.
Best laid plans of mice and men.
Right.
And this one went awry from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they didn't realize, and I feel sorry for Ken Griffin. I mean, I know people are pounded on him now. Poor little rich boy and all that stuff. But he wanted to change, and he knew that Pritzker, Governor J.B. Pritzker, born on third base, thinking he hit a triple, the porcelain prince. He knew that he felt that Pritzker was wrong for the state. Happen to agree with him. But the consultants that he had around him did not understand how much they were loathed by the base of the Republican Party and that whole combine business, where the combine is a bipartisan effort of insiders. When they're in, we're in. When they're out, we're in. We're always in, said a guy at Gina Giorgetti years ago. I don't know if Tom was there that night, but but they said it.
They're doing.
And they didn't explain to Griffin how much they were reviled, how much the combine is reviled in Republican circles in Illinois. And perhaps that's because Griffin's money, he's from that circle of oligarchs where they play that way. And the people of Illinois, the voters, didn't like it at all. And they came out. What was the final score of that game, guys?
52 million something or other. Are you talking the actual results?
No, the score I'm thinking of is the cost per vote.
$418
at least, right?
Yes,
at least
$418. I believe Politico did the math for us on that one.
Oh, Shea did.
Yeah.
So what do you think of all that, Tom?
You know, the money doesn't impact me at all. You know, guy worth $25 billion, spending $50 million, that's tip money to him. Key is that you need more people like him involved in civic activities and political activities. You need more people to put their own resources into the game. What I was disappointed with is that they could not get a groundswell of people to get involved in the political process and be part of it and get more to contribute towards it, rather than spending 90% of that $52 million was spent on television, made the television networks, rich, made the buyers rich, made the campaign consultants very rich. It didn't involve people. So, if you take a look at Mr. Griffin's life and what he's done at Citadel, what he's done in Illinois with more than $1.5 billion and giving money away to charities, mm-hmm. $600 million recently to the museums, and to everything that people come to Chicago to visit, he has contributed to the shed. He's contributed to everything that makes Chicago fabulous as a city where you want people to visit and why people visit. Yeah, so I commend him for what he did. You know, I'm not one of these people who say, "Oh, look, he paid $400." Yeah. Well, you know, Willie Wilson is doing a heck of a job right now, spending $2-4 million, and nobody's picking on him. I like Willie Wilson. He's actually a friend of mine, yeah. And you know what he's doing is what everybody, instead of giving his $4-5 million to the television networks to make everybody rich, he's giving it to the people. So, that's another way of doing it. What if Griffin had given $418 to everybody? I mean, if you want to really get crass about it, and if you really want to take it from a straight line all the way through, you should explore that opportunity. I would suggest that people at WBZ and others take a look at how money is spent and where the money went and who got rich in the campaign. Let's not talk about a guy spending $50 million out of $25 billion. I mean, that's tip money. But let's talk about where that $50 million went. Who got rich on this campaign off the backs of what people thought were going to be the winners in the Republican primary? Everybody knows who has traveled downstate since 2008, 2007, six, somewhere in there, since that recession, the housing. Everybody knows what people think downstate about people in elective politics and what they have done to that part of the world. They've taken the jobs, they took the coal mines, they took the roads, they've taken the health care. People have to travel an hour and a half to find a doctor if they're going to have a baby. I mean, a lot of people just have left because it's beautiful country, and I've traveled every county, I've been in every county twice. It's beautiful country, and the people are beautiful, hardworking people. Remember, 75% of this state is all about agriculture. And we laugh at those people and we make fun of them because we're up here having dinner at some of the nice restaurants and drinking nice wines. But the bottom line is their voice is important to be heard. And, Mr. Bailey is speaking for them now. And he's a thunderstorm in Illinois politics.
Yep.
Whether you like him or you don't like him, everywhere he goes, there will be a thunderstorm. And the left will make fun of him. The liberal press will make fun of him. People will have fun with him. But guess what? The people are happy with him because he's finally echoing what they've been saying for so many years, decades, about what's going on in this state. And, everybody talks about the numbers and how, the governor is going to beat him, big numbers, et cetera. There's no way this man's going to have an impact.
Yeah.
But he's having an impact. He already won this election, being outspent, number one, by the people that John has always called as the combine. But, if you take a look at some of the numbers in the early polling that's coming out, Dan Prof was involved in this race. who was a WIND guy, talk show, and but he's been he before that he was a political guy, and he's been working at this for years and years. He's lost a lot of elections, but he's learned what made those elections go south on him. And on this particular race, there's going to be a thunderstorm. There are not going to be any white gloves in this race from September to November. There won't be white glove campaigning. There's going to be thunderstorms, and people will have to answer for what they've done and what they haven't done. I think this race will be closer than a lot of people think. It's certainly Governor Pritzker is to win 60-40 today, but this race is going to get a lot closer. It's going to be really interesting.
But I mean, Tom, anything else in the results of this election stick out to you as surprising or
I think Governor Pritzker, you know, John talks about him growing up or waking up on third base and thinking he hit a triple. I think he hit a triple in this race. I think he actually landed on third base. I think his attitude about, you know, you could argue about the politics of it, what it looks like, how good it is, how bad it is. But I'm looking at the results of races and how people got there. He went out of his way to spend money. He funneled the money through the Democratic governor's operation and also spent some of his own money to elect his opponent, which is Mr. Bailey.
Yeah, pick his opponent, yeah.
Right. So, you know, I 25 years ago, I was assigned to work on a campaign for a very successful Illinois politician who had won 20, 30, 40 races. And he, one day he asked me, he says, "Tom, you know why I've won so many elections?" I said, "Well, sir, you're the best candidate. You got the, you're great on the issues. You love people. You know." He says, "Tommy, I appreciate the fact that you're very complimentary, but sorry, you're wrong." I said, "Oh, okay." He said, "You know why I won those elections? Because I had the right opponent. Now, your job's to help me find the right opponent." And, you know, it was a difficult, quiet task. But today, in today's world, they were very full frontal about it, right up front. Bailey's the guy I think I can win with, and he's the guy my pollsters tell me that I can beat. And let's get him in there because I don't want a black Republican running against me. And obviously, the Republican, you know, mainstream Republicans from Illinois gave him an opportunity with Irving, who had a lot of peccadilloes to deal with, and that helped him out a great deal.
Mm-hmm. But he ended up winning. That didn't come out publicly. If they would have, if he had stayed in the race, if he had been in the race in November,
right,
But so, the attitude is we picked our opponent. We're smart. We're the ones who are, you know, can manipulate reality and choose our opponent. But can I tell you something? I don't think sometimes you pick your you think you've got a patsy in there. I don't think this guy's a patsy, especially given I'm talking about Darren Bailey. I think you're right, Tom. It's gonna be thunder, and the people who are in November as they anticipate a red November nationwide.
Bruce Rauner was part of the combine, you know.
Yeah.
And he didn't know anything about lightning and thunder on the campaign trail. This guy does, and he's got a team around him that understands that. Governor Pritzker comes from 2025. You know, he's running the perfect campaign from 2025.
He's running for president, isn't he?
Right. Yes, he is. He's running a national he's running a national campaign.
Right.
And even, you know, in the media this week, he talks about the fact that he thinks there might be some primary, you know, opposition to Joe Biden. He said he won't be surprised at it. Well, you know, a lot of people won't be surprised at it. But for him to begin speaking in that tone, I think the last person that I remember was Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter. There might have been others since then. But when you take on an incumbent president, you have the entire apparatus of the White House and the building across the street. They're all looking at you, and they're doing everything they can to protect their jobs, their careers, and everything around them. So anybody who challenges Joe Biden is going to be, you know, front and center, better have their act together. if Joe Biden says he's running for re-election, I don't see anybody getting in the way, you know, because they're going to have to take on the White House, the administration, the executive office across, and they're going to take on everybody. Yeah. And they better have their act together. I don't see anybody on the Democratic side of the aisle that has that chutzpah. But this guy, Pritzker, is now getting quoted in the Washington Post. Even the Washington Post wrote an article about it this week that said, Governor Pritzker, you shouldn't be doing this anymore. Neither should Democrats. You should not be selecting your Republican opponents and selecting these extremists. It's a bad idea. You know, it's those typical Washington Post, attitude.
Right.
But yeah, the way they go about it. But on this particular Governor Pritzker thing, I think he comes out, you know, from this primary election with a great deal of winning at his back. And he's larger and bigger than life right now. However, he's going to have to manage what he's created. And I don't know how easily he thinks he can do that. I don't think it's going to be an easy road for him.
You know that Jeff Carlin is a master of sound. He loves sound. And you spent your life career in radio as well. And you love sound, too, which is why you wanted me outside with the birds and my dog doing your podcast, The Crisis.
Natural. Yeah. Right.
But
right,
I love it. But here, let me give you both some sound, and I know Jeff is going to make a note of it, and he's going to look for it, right, Jeff? Because I know you. You're my buddy, and I know you. Anyone see that movie about Jake LaMotta, The Raging Bull?
Oh, yeah. De Niro, right?
Yeah, De Niro. But at the end of this movie, the broken-down pug that LaMotta became is in prison. And I guess they got him in solitary or something, and he's alone, and he starts warming up as if he's in a fight, and he starts, hunching his shoulders, and he starts punching the wall. And he keeps saying, who's the boss? 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 And Tom, I just have to ask you, now that I've primed Jeff so much that I know he's excitedly searching for this line. Tom, is Pritzker the boss now?
Yes. If there was any doubt before, and there was a lot of doubt around the world of Democratic politics, I think he's the boss. I'm anxious to see the committeemen's races for the state committee. There are still some counting going on as of going into the weekend after the election, but we should know soon. And, he lost, his candidate lost the race for his state party chairman a year ago when, you know, Dick Durbin ran his candidate and won by a point and a half.
Right.
Robin Kelly's the congressman. She is now the Democratic chairman. And a lot of those races went both different ways, you know, in this race.
Uh-huh.
But he ran a slate. The governor had no qualms about running against Dick Durbin's slate. And so I'm anxious to see who wins that, because if he's got an edge on that thing, you know, when they get together and they decide who the chairman is again, the governor is going to squeeze a lot of arms. And he's in a good position to win that race and select the Democratic chairman of the state of Illinois. And I'm anxious to see that. But he's right on the edge of being able to be that person.
I don't want to claim coming up with the idea of who's the boss, because I did talk to Tom before we came on. We were talking the other day just about life and stuff.
Tony Danza?
Pardon me? No, not Tony Danza. Sorry. And Tom came up with that. He said, you know, Pritzker, as far as Democratic politics now are concerned, he's the boss.
And sure. Well, how do you explain the treasurer's race then, with Durbin, Pritzker, and even the venerable Jesse White endorsing Valencia, and but then Janulius pulling that one off?
Well, you know, I thought Alexi, pound for pound, ran the best race in Illinois. in this particular election. And I think knowing how he did that, he's going to go about it and do it again in the general election. Anna Valencia, you know, was one of the campaign workers for Dick Durbin early on. And she's very accomplished. She's got a great career ahead of her. But, you know, Alexei's been down this road before. He's been elected. He's been he's gone through the fire. He's been criticized. He's got his own issues that people have talked about. But he had that experience. He knew what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, and who to rely on getting it done. You can't. You that's priceless. And the guys that ran the Irvin campaign did not know that. Governor Pritzker is learning how to do that. I think he's biting off more than he can chew when he goes nationally. But he's got Anna Kubera, you know, his chief of staff, who was working for Hillary Clinton. I mean, he's got a good person there to kind of lead him through those issues. But the bottom line, the whole thing is that Alexei is in a real good position. And, you know, I think, you know, Dick Durbin did what he had to do because of his loyalty to the people around him. But, you know, and, you know, the governor did what he had to do. But Alexei is going to be in a good shape in the fall. I think Dan Brady, who's well-liked by everyone, he's an excellent candidate for the Republican Party, not at all to the left, not at all to the right, but a moderate, a guy that everybody can deal with. If I had a daughter and he came and knocked on the door as a young man, I'd be very confident that he'd go out and bring her home and be a perfect gentleman. He's that kind of person, the kind of person you want as a Secretary of State or as a governor. Dan Brady is a great guy. So it's going to be, that's a great race. I think that's a marquee race because Alexei's got, brings the savvy and the young family, and he's matured a great deal. And Brady brings the excellence of being a public official over a period of years, understands the game, understands he's got a great family. He's from Bloomington. He knows the turf. The two of them, you know, are going to run very good campaigns. It's going to be a great race. That would be a great, that's going to be a great race.
Well, there's two things about that race. Number one, Dan Brady is not the Democratic Party, and they, the Democrats who are running against Genulius did not bring up the name once, Jaws Giarango. They didn't bring up Alexei's associations with, I would say, some of the earthier elements of politics in Illinois, hearkening back to the old days. And even though he's got this clean, you know, the great commercial with the kid and he's shooting baskets with, the, with and his daughter's there and all that. they're going to, the Republicans are going to bring up all that stuff again. The bank, his dad's bank, mob loans and all that. How are they going to do it?
Well, I think all of that is about timing. Right. Anna Valencia, you know, came out negative early and it fell flat. I mean, you, it's all about timing in that particular, in this business of politics. And she was, you know, it didn't seem like there was any message discipline. There's no staging and there was no good research and they haven't done it. They have, obviously didn't do focus groups, or if they did, they weren't listening about how you do these things and, you know, parsimoniously move information. Brady will have that kind of operation around him. You know, you talk about the governor's race and everybody else that's running. Secretary of State's race has still got all the jobs. He's still got all the access. If you're driving a truck in this state, you better know the Secretary of State. If you're driving a car in this state, if you're selling a car, you're selling tires. I mean, if you're room building, you know,
You get to the point of it because people think Secretary of State is about licenses, you know, driver's licenses, rules of the road.
License plates.
They all forget that Secretary of State is about vehicle services. And all those car dealers throughout the state have to deal with the Secretary of State.
Right.
So, and there's a lot of inside baseball there.
Right.
If I were a Dan Brady oppo research guy, I mean, the easy thing All right, I'll give you one for free. I'll give these guys one for free. Just look up my name and Giannoulis, because I'm not really a big fan. And you're going to see stories that they're going to capitalize on. And the second thing I'd mention is that Giannoulis, there's Greek money in this state. Greek money, rich Greek guys with a lot of money, and they dropped it on Giannoulis to get in and pass this primary season. Where are they for Paul Vallis, Tom Serafin, Jeff Carlin? Mm-hmm. Last time I checked, Paul Vallis is Greek too. Where's his Greek money? He's running for mayor, I think, right? Isn't he?
That's right.
He certainly is. I don't know about the money thing, John. I mean, that's I've had conversations with people, just random people who read the news casually, right. And you know, they all mention Paul as being the sensible one and the person they think they trust with at least managing things. But I don't know. I don't think he moves a needle for people in like that passionate, emotional kind of way.
You got to have money. You have to have the money to do the ads and get on TV. And then the guy with the money comes with muscle of the money. And then there's all sorts of reporters and people around that money circling, like the consultant people, the combine guys. And they all love it. And then they start whispering to each other and ginning up stories. Oh, he's inevitable. Mm. Alexi Giannoulis. Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's Alexi is. Alexi is to me, he represents, to me, he's an attractive physical candidate, number one. And he's got great sense of confidence in dealing with people. Paul Vallis doesn't have the glamour looks that Alexi does,
right.
But he's got the solutions to all of our current problems in the city. Now, that's a bold statement for me to make, but he's got solutions that will get us there. It's not going to be overnight. He knows how to be a budgeteer. He knows how to play those economic games with the trading blocks and the people that hold our bond. He knows all of those issues, and he knows where the money is buried. And everything starts with money.
Let me ask you guys this. If you're a candidate running for a big job that requires a lot of administrative chops, and you don't understand budgets, and you're ignorant about the financial world and the municipal financial world, then you have to rely on other people, don't you? You have to rely on expertise. And the guy who doesn't have to rely on somebody else's consultant to read a budget and to know where the holes are, that's a dangerous man. But it's also a man that, you know, if you're one of the insiders, you might want to stop, because what you want is a meat puppet that shows up there. And the meat puppet, look at what Joe Biden is doing to the economy. I mean, he's a meat puppet. He doesn't understand what he's doing. And therefore, we have this inflation problem, et cetera. And the same holds for the city of Chicago, doesn't it? They want their guy. They want all their insiders from the Economic Club or from, Civic Federation. They want people that they can tap so that they can bend government the way they want it to bend, which is always towards them.
Right.
I don't know. Am I cynical?
Just well traveled, John.
Yes. Yes. No, I don't think you're cynical, but you know, the business is changes with the personality. I was reading the newspapers today and all these articles about the race and the aftermath of the race and running for office and all these things, but very few pieces about why the city department of transportation can't fix the potholes on Lakeshore Drive where the touring buses are breaking their axles. Seriously. Coming in from Indiana and Michigan. And I'm thinking to myself, what is wrong with this picture? I understand that, but there's a sense of who's in who understands the city and who's got a feel for this city, you know. And you know, when you're electing public officials, I think Lori Lightfoot, despite all the negatives that people write about her, is actually getting stronger as she gets closer to February 28th, 8 months from now, that election. That's what everybody's talking about. How did right. the election last week, in this week, impact her candidacy and other mm-hmm. candidacies around her? What kind of turnout did we have, gentlemen? We had
nothing.
18-20%?
Right.
80% of the people in Cook County did not make an effort to vote.
Right.
Now, what were they doing on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon? What were they not doing, or what were they doing that they wanted to avoid? A polling booth that was every 100 yards I walked around downtown, there was a place where you could go in and pull and vote.
And I mean, register the same day.
Right. I mean, it was really disheartening. 80%. So when you take a look at the numbers, and you take a look at the big, you know, what Gil Villegas lost by a number of votes to Ramirez as for congressperson, you know, that northern district that goes out to Hanover Park a long ways. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then you take a look at the number of people that voted, and then you say to yourself, "Wow, so many people didn't vote."
Right.
So you have to look underneath until the numbers come in. I went to the Board of Elections today. There's still numbers that are missing. So this election is going to be studied for some time. And what's interesting, it's a late election. So people are spending their summer, you know, trying to figure out how they're going to run their campaigns from Labor Day through November. And then the big picture is, how do you run Labor Day through February 28th if you're the mayor, knowing that you're going to lose New Year's, you know, a couple weeks of January, most of December, you know, half of November. So, you know, everybody's trying to figure out, how do you position yourselves? Where do you position yourselves? And through this last 2 week period, 10 day period, a 5-year-old was shot and killed in Chicago. And it was in the media places, but the outcry was so muted. And I thought to myself, are we getting calluses on our hearts?
Yeah. I think so. Because politically, the issue is now the main event. The main event has always been the mayor of Chicago. So and we are talking to Tom Serafin of Serafin and Associates and a political analyst on Fox Chicago. And I hope that Fox Chicago takes advantage of you, Tom, because I just want to I want to see you doing like that Jake LaMotta, who's the boss thing on TV.
You know, that's an interesting thing. He wanted to make that movie, Scorsese, Raging Bull. And I think my memory is, if it serves me right, it's failing me lately. It was MGM. It was a studio said, you have to make this other movie first. And he didn't want to make it. It was a bad script. He didn't like the movie. And the movie was After Hours. Oh. And I saw After Hours. First time I saw it, I was blown away by it. You know, and he won first place at Cannes in the film festival for After Hours. And it was one of the movies that he thought it was a throwaway. You watch After Hours. You want to be entertained. Jeff, watch After Hours.
Yeah,
Have you seen that?
Oh yeah,
that was in Soho in New York, but it could easily be applied to Chicago nowadays.
Well, if you really want to get entertainment, you'll go and look up Thief by James Caan.
Yes,
you want to know about Chicago, where the cops are played by outfit guys and the outfit guys played cops. Mm-hmm. But that's another story. Now, how's the boss, Pritzker, the boss? I'm going to have trouble dealing with this, but yeah, I agree, he is the boss. How's he going to play the Lori Lightfoot race? What's he going to do for her?
That's the million-dollar question. You know, the people I talked to believe that when Lori endorsed Kim Fox for the state's attorney's office, that there was some kind of, you know, either expressed or unexpressed agreement that if she did that, Tony Preckwinkle, the Cook County Board President, would look kindly on her during her reelection process.
Yeah,
we'll see if that's going to be the case. In this particular situation, the governor holds a very strong hand in Lori Lightfoot's reelection effort. He can be very helpful to her. And, you know, he talked to the Cranes reporter, Greg Hines, about what he wants to do. He wants to provide people with a free college education that can't afford it.
We can't afford it.
Well,
taxpayers can't afford it.
I understand that, but I pray that his program gets put into place, because if it actually works, that means our Chicago public schools that, you know, graduate only 75% of the kids in eighth grade that can read and write. 75% can't read and write. You know, 24% can. That means they have an option and they can go to college. Right now, they can't get into college because academically, we are graduating kids that aren't proficient at what we're graduating them with. You know, so we're letting all these generations down. So if he actually thinks he can do that, there must be some hope there. But he has to deal with the Chicago Teachers Union. I don't think that's part of his program. But if he's going to help out Lori Lightfoot, he's going to have to help her out there on education and with the Chicago Teachers Union. He can be very helpful there. I don't know where he's going to be on that.
You have Darren Bailey running as a Republican. You have Paul Ballas running as an independent, I guess, a Democrat, but definitely not a progressive Democrat. Mm-hmm. And you have, and he's pushing school choice, real school choice, targeting poor, low income, minority families to stop them from coming to Indiana, where they take your tax dollars and you apply your tax dollars to parochial school. That's an issue that forces Illinois to compete. And then you have, on top of that, you have Cam Buckner, son of a cop, I think. And son of a teacher. And he's like supposedly the CTU's candidate, Chicago Teachers Union candidate. I don't know how this is going to, how it's going to hash out, especially when, and then you have Rod Sawyer, who we still want to have on this podcast. And I've asked if he wants to write something for my website and talk about how he wants to, you know, be mayor and what happened to his father.
I talked to him earlier this week. He's interested. So we should watch this space, as they say.
Yeah. But all that's in play, right, guys?
Well, right. And on election day, and this is not counting the mail-in ballots, but on election day, 279,748 people voted. The Democrats accounted for 88.5%, or 247,000 votes. The Republicans were 11.12%, or 31,000 votes. Libertarians, you know, half a percentage, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what we have, you'll see, he's written about this in the Chicago Tribune on the editorial page. This former Congressman Dan Lipinski writes a long essay about how important it is that the independent voices begin to be heard. And, you know, he talks about people wanting him to pursue an independent candidacy in the 6th district out there in the suburbs. But he's not saying whether he will pick up that mantle, but he does talk about the fact that it is important for the independent voices to be heard, because the extreme left and the extreme right in Illinois were heard loudly, because 80% of the people in Illinois did not vote in the primary. Will they be heard? And is Dan Lipinski's independence and isn't his independent voice, is that something do you think is going to be heard from?
Jeff?
I mean, I think there's a need for it, certainly, like, not a vacuum, but a voice of more of a centrist, but not a centrist in the sense of you know, modern thing is more of like a, hey, let's common sense centrist, if that's a word.
A moderate Democrat?
Yeah, I think that's a voice that the race might need. I don't know.
Well, you know, when you talk about the independents, mm-hmm. and I try to cite these references. Rich Miller, who writes the Capital Facts out of Springfield in mm-hmm. Illinois, has been doing it for years and watches all these and listens to all the posters. You know, printed Dan Prof's Fabrizio poll in his blog, and he says that this pollster has been good. With the numbers, like other pollsters, they've all been in the same numbers. So you always mm-hmm. wonder if a pollster is going to be left, right, or leaning. But he says he is what everybody else is saying. He's saying, and what he said, that Bailey is +3 right now among independents in Illinois. Yes. It's really obvious. Bailey is +19. Biden approval 43-56. Biden has got a 13 lapse there, and the right track, wrong track. Illinois is 59 wrong track, 40 right track. Pritzker +7 among those who heard of both of them. So Pritzker's got a 7-point lead. To me, a 7-point lead right out of a primary when you've got all this time between now and November is a lifetime and a half. I'm surprised it's close.
Hold on to it, JB.
Right. And the one thing I always like to look at different pollsters is the generic ballot. If you ask somebody, would you prefer to take a Republican ballot or a Democratic ballot in the November election, where would you possibly go, this way or that way? It's +2 for the Democrats head-to-head. Mm-hmm. So, in a Republican tsunami, which they expect nationally, Illinois will not be unaffected by this.
No,
it's going to be an interesting time to be alive and be in your business.
Yeah. That's why we do it.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. You're going to have a lot to write about, John.
Just make sure I got to leave a tip at Gene Giorgetti the next time for veal chops and talking about politics. it is going to be interesting. And if I were Pritzker, it's not like, see, here's the thing about him. I remember back in the day when he was running against Jan Schakowsky for Congress, and she was kicking his behind all over the place. And Jack Lavin from the, Pritzker Hotel people, the hotel union guy, comes and says, hey, can you just have lunch with this kid? He's kind of getting his ass kicked. And it was Pritzker. So we went to Bruna's and had a long...
Very nice.
Yeah, of course. And had a long lunch, veal to salt and boca. He had some too. And pasta, he had some too. And we were talking about... He couldn't understand how he was getting murdered by the left, killed by the left. And he was insisting that he too is a progressive. And I just said, look, man, you got 5 billion, how many billions of dollars you got? And you should just say, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and no one can buy me, because you can't buy me. Who's going to buy him? Who's going to buy? What does he need? All he needs is to pass out dead presidents into the collection trays of the black churches right before election, leading up to that. And he's going to drop that on the preachers just like he did the last time.
Yeah.
And, can he get Tom the SEIU and the Chicago Teachers Union to come out for him?
He can. And, I've watched him from day one, and he's a charming, and his wife is charming, and they're gracious and they're kind to people. Yeah. And they're all always opening up the mansion to visitors. He's got that piece of him. And, we talk about Citadel, Mr. Griffin's spending 50, 52 million, whatever it is, out of 25 billion. Now think about that, 50 out of 25 billion. This gentleman, Governor Pritzker, spent 30 out of 3 billion. He's willing to put his money where his mouth is, and he's shown that. And he spent a greater percentage of of what we know he has. He may have more than that, but he spent a great deal more of what he has than Mr. Griffith did. But people aren't writing about those differences. They're writing different things. So he also has the allegiance of many of the mainstream political reporters that are currently writing. And I don't say allegiance in the fact that they follow everything, right, but they're not digging deep down. And in this particular race, he's going to have to be able to set up some moats and some barriers there, because I believe Dan Proft and the Bailey organization, they're going to come in with thunderstorms, and they're not going to be shy about making their point of view known. And they're not going to rely on traditional media platforms to move those messages. The messages will get out. So Governor Pritzker and his organization have to be very strong and be willing to go in there and fight tooth and nail, hand to hand. I don't know if they're capable of doing hand to hand the way Bailey's going to do it. Nevertheless, he has shown his willingness to spend more, a larger percentage of his funds on his career than, you know, Mr. Griffin has, despite what you read about in the newspapers.
They will come out after Pritzker on those billions of dollars in the Grand Cayman Islands, and they'll just drop that. That'll be pounded on the trust fund. Oh, I didn't touch the trust fund. Well,
Greg Hines mentioned it the other day from Chicago Cranes. They're also going to be talking about those veterans that died because of COVID. That was unnecessary because we've been through that exercise. Ronner had the same problem with the veterans dying. And nobody was paying attention. And then the Children and Family Services, which is a terrible situation, you know, is taking those issues and enlarging them for the general population. And then the graft in Illinois when it comes to the Department of Employment Security, you know, more of all those millions and billions of dollars that were stolen out from underneath the people of Illinois and the people of the United States.
What happened to those billions of dollars in COVID money? Oh, who got them? Wait,
right.
Did Yolanda Tolley get them? Did she get any? You know, remember her? She was the IAB chief.
Yeah, Greg Hines of Craze has talked about that a lot. So, I mean, there are going to be people that are going to be following up on those issues. Right. So, you know, for Governor Pritzker, if I were working the campaign, I would strongly suggest a strong offense is their best defense. Yes. And if I were him, I'd do what Jim Eggert did to Don Clark Netsch back in 92, I think it was. Don came out of the primary, you know, very successful, unsuspecting anyone that she was going to win. She ended up winning that race. I worked in that primary. And then in the general election, while we were all, you know, sitting back enjoying our cup of tea, you know, a few weeks after the election, Edgar went on the air with his millions and destroyed her in the next 6 weeks, and she never recovered, and she lost that election. If I were Governor Pritzker, I'd put Mr. Bailey away. I would wait. I'd take care of that, you know, in the next 5 weeks.
There was a lot of Cellini money coming against Don Clark Netsch in those days.
Oh, right. You know, I mean, and, you know, I begged her not to talk about the tax increase, but to make it a tax fairness program. Those who could pay should pay. Those who don't, can't, won't pay. And she kept wanting to do the tax swap. Wonderful lady, terrific human being, you know. But she ended up in the general election in a pool of sharks, and the sharks ended up winning.
We opened up this podcast talking about friends, and I guess we're going to have you back, Tom, to talk about how your friend John Cass cost you several hundred thousand dollars in a contract. Yeah. I don't know if the statute of limitations has expired on that, but we'll ask you about that, but not right now. We'll just seed the ground.
The interesting story I remember about you immediately is you're working City Hall for the paper, and I come in for some reason, you know, walk past the press room, and you're outside. He says, "Seraphim, why did you lay down in that fight up there on Milwaukee Avenue?" And I said, I didn't lay down. How can you get in a fight when you have seven cameras watching you from the networks and you're 3 days from the primary? That would have cost us the election, you know, so I had to
Tom Serafin.
That's a story for another time, though.
Tom Serafin was a loyal guy to Dan Rusinkowski, and he was being carved apart, carved into pieces by the Daily People in that race. And it's a big story. And somebody grabbed him around. Somebody wanted money. Somebody wanted Serafin to release money, and he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't release it to the guy who demanded it. And he has a lot of clout. And I'm 19th warder, you know, one of those one of those Irishmen that don't wear undergarments on the under their kilt. And that was a brawl.
It was the old-time cruise when people, rather than walking around the neighborhood with notebooks and flyers, were walking around with baseball bats.
Who are those brothers? Who are those two brothers that had your back?
The Stork brothers. Famous. They were great.
What?
The Stork brothers? Yeah, the guys with no necks.
Yeah, no necks. Definitely. Now we'll talk about it another time.
Another race. There's a great time, Sue. But this is a wonderful time to be alive if you're in politics. There's a lot of people, young people getting involved. I was really impressed with the young people on the campaign trail in this primary. And, you know, there's a lot of promise out there. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch how this general election unfolds. And with Governor Pritzker now, you know, riding the horse out front, you know, where's he going to take this whole operation?
And you got to do it by making decisions, Tom.
Right.
And you can't do it just by going calling Andy Menar in the middle of the night saying, Andy, help me out. What do I do?
He's no longer a candidacy of media and media relations and not talking to people. He's now in the middle of it. He's going to have to show some muscle. He's going to have to show some strength, and he's going to have to do that with his decision process. And it's going to be interesting to see how he does that.
And to think of a guy built like Pritzker walking a tightrope between Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot. You know, I'd love to see that film.
It would
maybe Fellini could direct it. You know, if you're talking about
that's a real good point. I would tell him that to him, it's no longer a tightrope. Yeah, I mean, he showed his stuff in the primary, whether you like him or don't, or like what he did or what he didn't. He showed his stuff. Now he's got to take it to another level. Or he's going to be where he is, and people are going to say it's a one-time operation. I'm anxious to see what the next move is.
Me too. And for all of you who are going to be following us on the Chicago Way in the coming day, in the coming weeks, because we got the main event of the mayor's race, the governor's race, all this stuff happening at the same time. And
8 months.
And the red tsunami that's going to... I think if it blows, see, the thing is, if it blows all across the Midwest, you can't tell me it's not going to blow into Illinois a little bit, you know?
It will be, but you know what? Bailey's people have to be smart enough not to turn off the independents. And it's easy if you get it too acidic and too negative to turn off the independents. And you have to understand that, you know, on the abortion issue, you know, 60% of the people in America think abortion should be legal, but 56% of them also think abortion should be legal up to a moment in time. And that moment in time, when you dig down, is anywhere from 16 to 20 weeks. So he's got to be he's got to be really, really smart about it. There can't be black-white issues. Life is all about gray and how you handle it. And it would be a better discussion, better debate, if the two of them could be very civil and talk about it and talk about all the gray areas that we have to live in. And, you know, how do you employ people downstate and keep them employed and help them with health care? How do you provide for them? There's more poverty downstate in Illinois that per capita than there is in Chicago. But what are we doing to help them?
More meth and a lot of fentanyl, too.
Right. How do we help them?
So Tom Serafin, thanks for joining us on the Chicago Way, buddy.
It's a great way to spend an evening. I appreciate you guys doing this in the evening.
Oh, our pleasure. Always.
Yeah. God bless you both.
God bless you and Annie and the boys.
And, buddy, Jeff, you stay well.
I always. You too, sir. Be well.
See you, buddy. Be well.
Bye, peace. Tommy. For Tom Serafin, my very good friend, president, founder of Serafin and Associates, and an analyst on My Fox Chicago. You heard him. You heard how he thinks. You heard how he thinks politics and how he thinks about it all through. And one of the things I pick up from Tom every time is he's gracious, and he's not about going for the jugular all the time. And I think that's a lesson for me, and maybe for those of you out there who like to play in this brutal game of politics. And for Jeff Carlin, future physics teacher, poring over all those sponsorship offers for johncastnews.com and for the Chicago Way. We'll be up soon with that. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, Greek Orthodox Christian, editor-in-chief of your favorite website, John Cass News. A lot's going to happen. A lot's happening now. Stay tuned to the Chicago Way on WGN+.